Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Here on Giants.com, joined by Jeff Fiegels. I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat if you want to talk to us on Twitter. And of course, the big news, I hope you just watched the press conference on Giants.com. Ben McAdoo is the Giants' new head coach. They go from within, promoting last year's offensive coordinator. And Jeff, obviously a big day for the Giants organization. John Mara termed it a new era in his opening statement. And always exciting to have a new head man in the building.
It is. I mean, not a, like a new guy in the building, but the new head man in the building. And it was a little weird in there, John. It was kind of, you know, I'm sure that I'm not the only one that was thinking that. But obviously things go on in this business. But I think that Ben McAdoo had a good press conference. I was impressed with the way he handled the questions. I think he's a very focused individual. Not that just because he's the head coach of the Giants now, I think that's just the way he really is normally. And I think that, you know, as far as his staff, that's probably the next question that's going to get into is who's coming aboard. He did allude to, Spagnuolo in his second year of his operations here.
That inadvertently.
And it's going to be fluid. So
Well, let me put it this way. He didn't say Steve Spagnuolo will be back. He said his staff was going to be very fluid, but he did reference the fact that the defense would be in the same system for a second year. So I guess theoretically that could mean same system, different defensive coordinator, but the fans can read into that whatever they want.
But I think that it makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
Why not? But, and it is a little bit strange, but I think people will get used to it. And, there's an off season to get started on. I think the first thing he said that made sense to me was – they're going to get into it, and they're really going to go back and look at the season and look at what went wrong, and I think that would work. That's the first thing that I would do, aside from getting my own staff.
Well, you know what they
what
say.
Went wrong?
The definition of insanity is doing the same things over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yes.
So, and again, I think that's one of the reasons the Giants made a change at the head coach position, and now they'll look back and they'll try to figure out how to correct the things that plagued this team in 2015. And Jeff, we've talked about it a million times. It's not a short list. When you go 6-10 two straight years, the list isn't that short. You know, John Mara spoke to it again after the press conference. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, the defense has to get better. You got to do better at the end of the games, et cetera, et cetera. Now, a couple things I want to get to. We took notes during the press conference here. I want to get to what Ben McAdoo specifically talked about first. Basically, he thought it was a good professional search done by the Giants organization. Very thorough. John Mara and Jerry Reese echoed those statements after the interview. John Mara and Jerry's both said all six candidates were very strong. They would have been happy with any of the six. When John Mara took questions from the media off the podium, which we'll have up on Giants.com at some point, he made a couple of points here that I thought were interesting. He referenced a couple times how awful the last 3.5 seasons were. So obviously three seasons under 500.
So that was on his mind.
And then the second half of 2012. So that was a big part of the reasoning for this change. But then he also was very clear to say, this move and the way it came about is not blaming Tom Coughlin for the team's problems. This was his quote. This was an organizational failure, starting with him and going down the line. He said he was impressed with how Ben McAdoo got good responses and connected with players at practice. He was happy with what Ben McAdoo said about Odell Beckham in terms of trying to make him a more mature player. He also talked about how Ben McAdoo understands when you build a roster, free agency is useful as a tool to fill holes, but if you're going to be successful, you have to build through the draft. So he's on board with that. Both Jerry Reese and John Mara said Ben McAdoo will be in consultation, and the coaches will be in consultation with Jerry Reese. But as Ben McAdoo said on the podium, ultimately it's the general manager that picks the players. And Jerry Reese was very firm when he spoke to the media as well, and he wanted to clear up any misunderstanding from last week that if a player's on this roster and it fails, it's his fault. And he repeated that a couple times when he spoke to the media afterwards. So certainly putting the big red arrow over his head when it comes to the personnel. And John Mara said a couple of times that the way this team has to get better is by getting the head coach whomever it is, now Ben McAdoo, better players. And that's where they're going to start now, reviewing 2015. The personnel department will start looking at free agents, getting ready for the draft, and that's the direction this team's heading in at the moment.
Yeah, and the first thing is the free agency is right around the corner.
Isn't it? Less than
and,
2 months.
And one thing that, you know, this search took a little bit of time, so they're probably a little bit behind in their preparation for NFL free agency because they don't know, you know, the type of coaches that are going to be here. And I'm not, and I'm just going to say it this way, is that you don't know what your defense is going to look like, you know, kind of understand what your offense is going to look like. But, you know, that that all has to go into evaluation at the end of the season.
No, the personnel department can. They take their notes on the players
right.
and then adapt them later to whatever happens.
Yeah, so that's where, you know, okay, we need X, Y, and Z in free agency.
Right.
We've talked about the money that's going to be available there. We've also haven't talked a lot about how much maybe more money there's going to be available with some of the veterans taking pay cuts here and there. We don't know who, what. It happens with every team, not to say that it's only going to happen to the Giants.
Yeah.
But that usually what happens. But we do know that on paper it's $50 million or something. That's some good coin to be able to go out and throw at these free agents because a lot of people don't understand that you must spend money in the National Football League.
There are ways around that rule,
but
though,
you
too.
Still got to spend
correct.
The money.
Like the Raiders are $50 million under the salary cap.
But
you can count money towards your infrastructure and stadium into that pool. There are ways around it, but yes, there is a minimum.
The players have to get a certain amount of that pool
that you
of
have to
money.
Get above.
And I think that that's important. What's more important to me, John, is that they find the right fix with these players that they need to come in here. And,
right.
and not just put a piece of gum out, take a piece of gum out of your mouth and plug the hole. We got this has got to be something long term. These guys that are free agents that actually pan out, that they go to some Pro Bowls, they really make an impact at whatever
yeah.
positions they are.
A couple of notes from the press conference. John Mara said afterwards that coming out of the first round of interviews, Ben McAdoo was their first choice. But he admitted, interestingly enough, interest from Philadelphia and the fact he was going to be heading down there for a second interview made them speed up that second interview with Ben McAdoo, and once he met with the Tishes, they made the decision quickly that he was going to be the next head coach. Couple of things that Ben McAdoo spoke about. He had very nice things to say about Tom Coughlin, privileged to serve under him. And it's funny, I was joking with a couple members of the staff before the press conference because Ben McAdoo showed up at real time 10:30. And I said, he's 5 minutes late. And
yeah.
then the first thing he says when he gets up there is the clocks will not change and it will stay on Tom Coughlin time. So I'm happy I don't have to go reset my car clock, my watches, and my clocks at home, which drives my wife crazy, by the way, because I have everything 5 or 10 minutes ahead,
yeah.
so I'm never late. She gets it, but it drives her absolutely nuts.
Your dog doesn't care, though.
No, he does not care, especially when it was 5 a.m. 2 days ago. Thanks a lot, bud. He embraced the pressure of playing in New York, said he likes it, he's trained for it, he's ready for it. He said there were four elements to building a successful team. Here are the four elements he gave. Strong leadership, and that's from a coaching perspective and a player perspective. Talented people with integrity leading the way.
Needed.
Positive work environment and working well with players. And then structure and function and building relationships. Three aspects he wants his players to have. Respect, humility, and dedication. Here's the line I liked. The word obsessed is simply a word the lazy use to describe the dedicated. I thought that was a really
pretty
good
line. If you really think about it, that's so true. It really is. I mean, you see some of these guys. That's good. I like it. And some of the things that he had mentioned, the four different items there, just off the top of my mind, I've had reading it, there are a couple in there that definitely need to be addressed for this team. My first one, in my opinion, is leadership. That's one.
And that's in the locker room you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah, no, this is the players. This is the locker room, the team. The leadership to me, I feel like, and again, it's very difficult to just go out and find a leader. You know what I mean, John? It's like you just, if I'm going to go get a guy that comes in here and he's instantly going to be a leader in the locker room, it's not that easy to do because there's guys that have to respect that guy, first of all.
It's hard for a first-year player on any team to really step in and
no
be a
question.
Leader right away. It's very difficult.
But there has to be some sort of a transition for some of these younger guys that are on this team, the Odell
right.
Beckhams of the world, the Derek Canard, you know, not Derek, that's
Devin.
Dead, Devin. These guys have to kind of start to move into that leadership. You got some of the veterans that may be hanging around here are still there, but build up the leadership. Build up the trust within the locker room. That's
you,
a good one.
And you played against his dad, by the way, back in the early 90s.
I played. He actually was a teammate of mine.
Which team? Arizona?
Arizona.
Oh, okay. Because I knew he was with Dallas. I forgot he was with Arizona. A couple other things he talked about. Team identity. Everything starts with sound, fundamental football, and that's where you start. He wants smart, tough players with discipline and poise. And you can obviously hearken those two last things, the things that happened towards the end of the year for the Giants. He said the biggest challenge for the Giants, and for him specifically being head coach, is now large-scale leadership. And he talked about how as a position coach, you're the leader of a room of, you know, 5 to 10 guys, or in a quarterback's case, 3 guys. When you're an offensive coordinator, that expands to 25 guys because you're dealing with the offense 25 to 30. Now, as he says, I get to get my hands on the whole team.
Sure.
So that's the thing that's exciting for him. Another person asked him if his quote-unquote meteoric rise has almost seems fast to him. And he said, no, I think it was too slow.
Yeah,
so it
fast
shows
enough.
You not just how ambitious he is, but how much he's been thinking about this opportunity. He's a very prepared guy.
No
question. I think that's fair to say. Two other things. Important to build relationships with players, something that Tom Coughlin said before he retired. But he's also said, which I thought was interesting.
Boundaries.
You have to have boundaries.
Yeah, and that's true.
And you know what that means. You're not supposed to be these guys' best friends.
No.
You have to have an air of leadership and authority over these guys. And John Mara made the point, too, that he liked Ben McAdoo's edge. Ben McAdoo's a little bit of a temper.
Yeah.
That's what edge means.
Yeah.
And he'll yell at guys.
Oh, you've
on
seen
him,
it. Yeah.
And I think that's what Ben McAdoo talks about when he talks about having a boundary. He wants to maintain authority over these guys.
Well, any head coach has to have that. And it's done, in my opinion, two ways. Number one, through success from another team. If the guy comes in here, you're going to instantly have that type of boundary with him because people are going to say, hey, you know, this guy's won 2 Super Bowls. Look who he is, a.k.a. Tom Coughlin.
But it's tough now because these guys have known him as an offensive coordinator. So they might be maybe buddy-buddy is the wrong word, but the lower you get in the totem pole in terms of coaches, the
right.
more friendly you are with these guys.
I think
it's a little different when you're head
there
coach.
There is a little bit, but I do think that this roster in the next 18 months, it will look differently, obviously, than it did last year.
So good point.
These other things are going to happen. But I think that the other part of it is that when a guy like him, who's been around the building, he's now going to have the head coach title.
He's in the corner office now, Jeff.
What's that?
He's in the corner office now.
He's in the corner office. He's going to have to have a little bit of that bark that people are going to have to respect that, hey, you know, he's not the coordinator. This is the head coach. This is the guy I work for him now. I mean, this is the guy that's going to tell me if I'm going to be on the team or not. You know, so big shoes to fill, not so much because of Tom Coughlin, but just big shoes to fill as a head coach. You have so much more responsibilities. On the sideline, John, think about it. When he's on offense, or when the team goes on the field as defensive, he's sitting there next to Eli Manning with the surface going over. He's not going to be able to do that now. He's going to have to be watching what's going on the field defensively. So whoever the offensive coordinator title is, or whatever the quarterback coach, they're going to be the ones that are now going to be sitting with Eli. So a lot of different processes that Ben's going to have to get used to. I'm sure that having, if Spags is indeed going to be on the staff, or someone like Joe Philbin, or some of the people that the names have been mentioned with all prior head coaching experience, will only help him.
Finally, he said this team is about evolution, not revolution.
Sure.
And that was in response to a question asking about how much of the old staff are you going to keep on. And I think that indicates that you want to maintain some continuity going from the last regime to this one. The things he didn't talk about, he was asked about the staff. You mentioned a couple names right there. He gave no specific details on staff.
No.
He did talk about the defense being in the same system a second year, so take that for however you want and whatever that means. But he said that's very fluid with the coaching. He also did not give a good answer, or an answer at all. I shouldn't say a good answer. He declined to answer. He said he doesn't know yet what he's going to do in terms of play calling, depending on who else is on the staff, whether or not he'd be willing to give up that duty. He also indicated, though, that that might be something he keeps under the hat a little bit because he considers that a competitive advantage other teams. So that might be something we have to wait and figure out until August. Though I'm sure during training camp practice we can figure out who's sending the plays in, right?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, I got a hard time believing that he's going to give up the play calling duties. This is my opinion.
It's a tough job, though, man.
It is very tough, but I think that he's been. I think he wants to do it, and I think that it's a different. It's tough to call plays in an NFL football game. It's going to be even tougher to call plays and be the head coach. But look, guys like McCarthy, who he has tutored under, saw him do it. So I think there's a lot of guys that still – Sean Payton does it. These are all experienced head coaches. So we'll see. Have to see. And, you know, he's right. I mean, why would you let anybody else know what I'm doing? I don't really care about you guys. I'm going to – you know, we'll figure it out when it comes in August, like you said, John.
Much unlike Tom Coughlin, he said he might shake up the schedule a little bit every once in a while to mess things up. Tom does not like shaking up schedules.
Well, no, I mean, that's his philosophy, and that he's
and we'll
entitled
see what that
to
means.
It. Yeah, I don't know what that means, and I really have no idea, even to speculate on it.
No, I don't know how that's going to work either. And that's pretty much where we are. I think I got to everything pretty much that he mentioned, John Mara and Jerry Reese mentioned in terms of their interviews today with the media. So let's get to the calls, Jeff. 201-939-4513.
Hey, by the way, how did we do on our picks last week? You and I, we were the exact same. Remember, we picked.
We did. We did 2-2. I think
we were 2-2. Okay.
Well, actually, no. We might have been 3-1.
I thought that because I mean,
no,
we did
2-2. We both got the Redskins wrong, and we both got the Bengals wrong.
Thanks,
Cincinnati, for throwing that away. By the way,
yeah, thank you.
Much appreciated.
Wow, what a game that was.
We could have went 3-1, but I was surprised at how well the Packers played.
And you kind of think about how they're going to – is that the Packers you saw earlier in the season?
I have a bad feeling that they're not going to have as good of a game against Arizona on Saturday night.
Not after what they were 3 weeks ago there.
And
it's like a bad nightmare.
They got all these guys hurt now. Who knows if Gronk's going to play? I don't know what's going on there. Anyway, not important. Your calls. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. If it's regular fantasy football, you're done by now. There's no fantasy football in the playoffs, but there is on DraftKings. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com. Enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Let's start off with Jason in New Jersey. Jason, what's going on?
Hi, Jason.
Hey, yeah. Want to address three things from yesterday. You and Lance kept harping about the Ben McAdoo and the personnel thing. What I was saying is,
Jason, I don't want to rehash this argument for a fourth time with you. If you have a new point, let's please make it.
No, I'm saying what Ben McAdoo, I'm referring to what Ben McAdoo said in his presser.
Okay.
He said that him and Jerry Reese would work together on personnel. That's all I was saying. I never said he would directly pick the players. I'm just saying that he would have more heavy input now that he's a head coach. So that's out of the way.
Okay.
You guys can stop harping on that. That's number one. Number two, you also said that it would be difficult to achieve an explosive offense with limited turnovers. Well, that's why we hired McAdoo to do that. We hired him to build an offense to get to the point where we can have an efficient, explosive offense that limits turnovers at the same time. The same offense that Aaron Rodgers won two MVPs in. Eli Manning can be a consistent MVP candidate in this offense with McAdoo at the helm. Number three, personnel decisions. Andre Williams won't be on the roster next year. I think it's pretty clear he can't play in the NFL. And he doesn't fit McAdoo's offense. He's not a West Coast back. And number two, Justin Pugh, I think, should be the right tackle instead of left guard, because if you look at week 17, they could have left Pugh at left guard and put Bobby Hart at right tackle, but they moved Pugh to right tackle. I think he's a better – in McAdoo's offense, he's a better fit at right tackle, because what McAdoo wants to do is keep the interior part of the defensive line at the line of scrimmage in the pass protection game. And you want power blockers to do that. You look at Green Bay with T.J. Lang and Josh Sitton. You look at the Oakland Raiders running a similar offense with Gabe Jackson and Rodney Hudson. So,
no, but Jason, if they wanted Justin Pugh to play left tackle once Will Beatty got hurt, I mean, if they wanted to play right tackle once Will Beatty got hurt, they would have put Pugh at right tackle this year, but they didn't.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying next year going forward, now that McAdoo's a head coach, under Coughlin's offense, Coughlin wanted Pugh at left guard. I'm saying – look for Justin Pugh to be the full-time right tackle, and
I would be shocked if that happened. Shocked.
Why was Justin Pugh playing right tackle in Week 17, not Bobby Hart?
Because there was no one else on the roster that was healthy and good enough to play right
Bobby
tackle.
Hart.
Bobby Hart projects as a guard, not as a tackle.
He's saying
okay, but
go ahead.
I'm just saying. I think he's a better fit as a right tackle.
All right, that's your opinion.
Okay,
that's good. All right. Okay.
Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, yeah. Jason.
Appreciate the call, my friend.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know where he's coming from. I mean, how does he know that Andre Williams is going to be on the team next year? I mean, is he the GM of the Giants now?
I mean, look, Andre Williams had a rough second year.
He did, but I you know, what's to
There's
say
no
that?
Arguing that.
We don't know.
Obviously, you brought in Ben McAdoo to have an explosive offense and limit turnover. Sure, you did, but it's also a very difficult thing to do. It depends on the talent on your roster as well.
Well, it depends on what you say is explosive. I mean, didn't their offense finish in the top 10 in the league and pretty much all?
Well, Jason's overall theory is that Tom Coughlin was holding back Ben McAdoo's true offense, and now since Tom's now gone, it'll be much more explosive with Ben McAdoo there by himself running the show as a solo coach.
I think I remember Jason from the call when he was talking about
last
Jason
week.
Starks.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Hey, listen, that's your opinion, and you're entitled to it, and that's good. That's why we like to give our callers on Big Blue Kickoff Live their opportunity to come in and share with us. So.
Give them a form, absolutely. Let's go to Elijah in Connecticut. He's up next. Elijah, how are you, pal? Thanks for joining us.
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, bud.
Okay. I just wanted to not really rant, but just say some key points in which I think, you know, that the Giants, like, need to address this offseason with Ben McAdoo as the new coach.
Yeah,
I truly believe that that these next two like seasons within free agency and the draft are really critical to justify this decision of keeping McAdoo. I understand that Eli is putting up some of his best stats, but from watching this season, I truly feel like the offense didn't really meet the expectation. And what I mean by that is we knew the defense was going to be new. And I felt like with the power, offensive power we had on offense, I feel like there were games where the offense should have put the game away and it didn't. And I felt like we relied on the defense too much to get that one more extra stop. So the point I'm trying to really overall say is that this season I would like to see more Shane Vereen. Definitely. I would we definitely need a stronger third wide receiver. And the tight end position needs to be addressed because – you look at what Green Bay is doing and how they're making their system work. Mind you, they have had their struggles on offense this season. They don't have Jordy Nelson. I get that. But I feel like with Eli Manning leading this team, I feel like our offense really shouldn't have had the stalls it had these past two seasons. I'm just not satisfied with the blow 8-8 season. I feel like having Eli Manning, it should be better. Another point I just wanted to address.
Yeah. Hold on, let's stay on that one. Let's stay on that one. So you want a third wide receiver. Well, you had Victor Cruz out all year.
Well, you but you're assuming Victor's right. going to be the second receiver.
But
who's
I'm saying,
if,
I know that, but I'm just saying you want the offense to be – well, they didn't have Victor Cruz. Larry Donnell gets hurt at the tight end position. You lose Daniel Fells, okay?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. right before our eyes, the Giants develop a tight end. I mean, Will Ty is just all of a sudden grew up in front of us. So I think those are some key guys that this team's going to get back next year offensively. But
right.
I will agree with you on the third receiver. We need to find one of those. Dwayne Harris can't be that guy just because of the position he plays on special teams too. So, and then Shane Vereen, I think he's been here 1 year. I think they're going to look at the roster. They're going to look at how they called plays with him. And I think that you will see a little bit more of a variety of Shane Vereen next year in this offense of McAdoo. That's just my opinion. What was your next one?
My other point was, and just to add on to the offense, I don't know if maybe you guys have seen, but I would like to see the Giants try the pistol formation. I know Green Bay uses it a lot. Peyton Manning uses it a lot. And it's been a staple of the Green Bay offense, so I'm not really sure why the Giants haven't tapped into that. Like I said, I'm not a coach. I don't make that call, but I feel like that's a move that probably should be tapped into, if you ask me. The second point I just wanted to make was that, I mean, I know Jerry Reese gets a lot of grief, and I'm not trying to defend him here, but a lot of injuries have happened.
Yes.
A lot of free agents haven't panned out. So I feel like he doesn't get enough credit because I feel like the 2010 roster, the 2011, stuff like that, I feel like those rosters get overlooked. So I'm saying that the job that he does getting the Giants prepared, I think, is a decent enough job. I just feel like injuries and, you know, not good free agent contracting or panning out has really tainted it. And just to wrap up here, not to keep you guys long.
Yeah, finish up, please.
Yeah. And then with the coaching candidates, like I said, I'm 50-50 on the Ben McAdoo. I feel like maybe everything should have been brand new, but I understand keeping it in-house. But I feel like Eli Manning, I would have gave him another chance in a new offense. And I know that's scary for Giants fans again, but I feel like too much of the blame was put on Coughlin. But I understand change is needed, but I really do have a problem with keeping it too in-house. I guess that's how the Giants do it. I just would have liked to see something maybe outside of the box just to say that
sure.
we did it.
All right, thank you for the call, bud.
I just wanted to make,
thank you, Elijah. Appreciate it.
Well, I think if we go back and look at this, John, from perspective of this, is that, you know, after the first year of Ben McAdoo's offense, you know, going forward, everybody was looking forward to that second year of Ben McAdoo's offense, and look how it panned out. It did pretty well.
Right.
I think that when you look at Coach Spagnuolo's first year as a defensive coordinator was absolutely, you know, horrendous the way that the defense finished and played all season. So I think a lot of people are now looking forward to, if he is in fact going to be the next defensive coordinator, that could change. Things could get better with some extra players and some guys, you know, Hankins getting healthy, coming back. You get a Collins who's played a second, now going into his second season after starting every single game. Some growth at that safety position. There's some free agency on the defense. We've got to figure out what's going to happen with Prince. But I just think the way when he was saying, I want to see things change, well, you're going to see change on the staff. All right, you got the head coaches leaving, and even though Ben McAdoo is now the head coach, He wasn't a head coach before. He was a coordinator. He had zero say in things.
Right.
He's going to have a lot more say in that. So you are going to see a lot of change going forward. Even if it is some of the same coaches, it's now a different head coach who will impose his philosophy and his the way he wants to do things on that new staff.
Just a note, by the way, and I was curious because Jason brought this up before. You know, Eli Manning's turnovers over the last 5 years and his interceptions.
Okay, well, this year was great.
Alarmingly consistent, and I think in a good way. I'm going to go back. It's interesting. Generally speaking, interceptions have gone down the last couple of years. Not one quarterback in each of the last two seasons has thrown 20 more interceptions. Not one. This year, the most was 18 by Blake Bortles. Eli Manning with seventh worst, I guess, in the league, as I would put it, with 14. So seventh most. Last year, he was eighth most with 14 interceptions. So pretty much identical. You go back to 2013, that's the outlier. That was the bad year. That was the 27 interception pick year, most in the league. All right? But you go back to 2012, the year before that, Eli, 10th in the league, 15 interceptions. The year before that, Eli Manning, in the best year of his career, was 7th in the league with 16 interceptions. So, I mean, if you want to push that 2013 nightmare aside,
okay,
he's going to be between 14, 15
and 16
interceptions.
Yeah.
That's the neighborhood.
And he's
going to
have one of those games
where he throws four.
Where he's three or four.
Yep.
And okay, and if we can eliminate one of those games and go from 17 or 16 down to 12, then what's to put him at 12? He might move into the top five.
And 14 to 16 is a good number to be at. If you're a quarterback that throws as many passes as Eli Manning, yeah, 14 to 15 picks is a good number to be at. This year, Ben Roethlisberger threw 16. Matt Ryan threw 16. Derek Carr threw 13. Phillip Rivers threw 13. If you go back to last year, Phillip Rivers threw 18. Drew Brees threw 17. Andrew Luck threw 16. Peyton threw 15. You know, you go back. If you're a good quarterback and you throw a lot of passes, interception is just going to happen. It's just the way it goes.
Are those attempt numbers pretty consistent with those guys that you mentioned?
They're all in the same neighborhood. Yeah,
you know,
I'd say.
How many are there? Just by I mean, what are we talking? 500
in terms of attempts?
No, more than 500.
This year, Blake Bortles led the league in picks with 18. He had 606 pass attempts. Eli Manning had 618, which actually looks like it's third most in the league, behind Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers.
Okay, and then and Drew Brees had how many, and Phillip Rivers had?
Brees this year he must have had a pretty good year. Where's
he's
Drew
thrown
Brees
a lot
on this list? Nah, Drew Brees actually did not throw a ton of picks this year. Where is he? There he is. He threw 11 this year.
Okay.
And 627 pass attempts. So, there you go. I just thought it was interesting. Matt Ryan, 614, right on Eli. He had 16 picks. So, again, all those guys in the state neighborhood, if you're going to throw that many passes,
you're going to get 15.
Yeah. It's just kind of the way it goes. All right, we're going back to BW. He joins us for the second straight day. He wants to talk about the Giants' new head coach. BW, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, good. BW.
Yeah, I felt like yesterday, I was congratulating Ben McAdoo, but I really piled on Jerry Reese. So today I want to give, like, McAdoo his due.
McAdoo is due.
That rhyme. I guess as a coach, McAdoo, you get what I'm saying? But the only concern I have with McAdoo is that 2 years ago, he never called a play in his life. You know, so now he has to focus on all facets. And I don't know his defensive knowledge You know, he's more of an offensive guy, so I feel like he's going to be relying heavily on Spags.
Oh, of course he will.
And, yeah, and the defense, more than anything, was the biggest concern. You know what I mean? I like that he said, you know, we're not trying to rebuild, we're trying to reload. I like that. You know what I mean? I like that he has a win-now kind of mentality. And, you know, of course, you want to win in the future. But the only thing I really didn't like is that, you know, he's saying, look, we're going to leave it up to Jerry Reese to make, you know, personnel decisions. And, of course, you're going to leave it to your GM to do that. But I don't know if he's the guy that says, no, I need this guy to win. Can he get that player? You know what I'm saying? Because Jerry Reese in his press conference, when he was trying to, you know, deflect the blame a little bit, was saying, hey, I don't pick everything. You know what I'm saying? So I want to know if McAdoo is going to be that guy where it's like, yo, I need this guy.
Well, I don't think any of us know that. I mean, none of us know what goes on behind those doors. And I would imagine that if you were the head coach of a football team at this magnitude, that you will, you know, you're going to get asked what your opinion is, you know.
So, right.
I mean, whether it's they're going to say, okay, absolutely, you're right, Ben, we're going to get that guy. But I have a feeling that sometimes that card is played in those meetings to say, I got to have this guy. I mean, this, and it happens. I'm sure it does, but we don't know for a fact.
And BW, this is how the evaluation process works. You know, and Jerry Reese was much more firm today when he spoke to the media that every player on this roster and any failures of players on this roster are his responsibility, period. He was very clear on that today. He said it twice, and he actually asked, you guys get that? You understand? So he was very clear about that today.
Well, you got to make up for, you know, deflecting the blame.
Right, right. And BW, I don't think that was his intention. I think all he was trying to do was explain how the evaluation process works. Yeah. And I can tell you how it works. A scout will look at a player. Then they'll have a couple other scouts look at the same guy to cross-check. Whoever the position coach is of the position the player plays, he'll take a look at it. The head coach will take a look at it. They all put their grades in. Mark Ross will have a grade on the guy. Jerry will have a grade on the guy. And then they'll take all that information together. They'll weigh it however they want to weigh it. And then in the end, and this is the point that Jerry Reese made today, he's the one that makes a decision. So everyone is input. But as the general manager, it's his ultimate decision on who the Giants sign in free agency or who the Giants draft, period.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? He's the main, you know, he's the person that's going to be making the last decision. And I just really, you know, especially since McAdoo is not really a defensive guy, how would he say, like, you know, like, for example, like, you know, he might need a linebacker to do what he needs to do. You know what I'm saying? But Jerry Reese might be like, hey, you know, but this defensive end, you know what I'm saying? How much will, you know, that sway the GM sort of? Because, look, personnel has been the reason why this team has been the way it is. You
BW,
know what I mean?
Honestly, I don't have that answer for you. I don't think anybody else knows either. We'll have to wait until the draft. And quite frankly, we don't know what goes on in the draft room either. So I don't know if we're ever really going to know the answer to your question. I think it's a good one. I just don't think we're going to know the answer. I appreciate the call, man.
And we're also,
I appreciate it, man. Y'all be good.
Hey, you too, bud.
We're also, you know, that's kind of just something that is going to be worked out over time. These guys are going to get to know each other, and they're going to feel each other out a little bit to kind of, you know, understand each personality, you know, what his philosophy is, what Jerry's philosophy is. And hopefully they meld together, and they can come up with decisions that are to the best interest of the football team. I think that when you go into asking for something, one person says this, one person says this, you have to have a common goal and say, is this guy going to help our team? Yes or no. Is he going to cost us a lot of money? Yes or no. So that's why they call them general managers, because they can basically make the final decisions on things.
Speaking
they hire them that way.
Speaking of players costing you money, fans, don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Eric Virginia, you're up next. How are you?
What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Happy Friday.
Hey, you
too. Yeah, happy Friday. I love that.
3-day weekend, right, too, by the way.
That's it.
Three-day. Yep. Oh, by the way, Eric, I'm happy you brought that up.
Because?
No Big Blue Kickoff on Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So you guys get 3 days.
Take the day off.
To hear our big mouth. And hopefully by the time Tuesday gets around, we'll have some additional word on who might be on this coaching staff that we could talk about. Now, Eric, go ahead.
Okay, so now we're stuck with NMAC 2, and we – we have to look at this as being optimistic. We can't go back and change anything.
Well, we're going to be optimistic, but let's not start off by saying now we're stuck with Ben McAdoo.
They chose Ben McAdoo.
I mean, that's not being very optimistic when you say we're stuck with Ben McAdoo. All right, go ahead,
well,
Eric.
Okay, so as a young head coach, the first thing I would do is surround myself with some good people.
I agree
and
with
I
that.
And I think from all the news that you're hearing, he's starting to do that.
Okay.
So my I guess my big question is injuries have been the big Achilles heel in this team for the last 3 years.
More than that.
Well, what is he going to do to change that part of the team since, let's face it, there hasn't really been that much change?
No, Eric, that's where you're wrong, though. There's been a ton of change. They've changed their practice schedule. They've changed their medical procedures. They've changed how they've monitored guys. They've changed how they evaluated guys. I wish I had a good answer for you as to why the injury problem hasn't been solved. I don't. I frankly don't think at this point the Giants front office has one. Because if you heard Jerry Reese at the press conference 2 weeks ago, he basically said, we've changed so many things, but we keep getting the same results. So the only thing that might change now, and I don't know if it will or not, depending on who Ben McAdoo brings on as staff, maybe you'll have a change in strength and conditioning. Who knows? I happen to like Marcus Paul and Jerry Parmalee. I think they do a great job. But that's the only thing that I think, you know, significantly could change that maybe could have an impact. But quite frankly, Eric, they've really changed a lot of stuff the last 3 or 4 years. They even changed their practice schedule this year. They didn't practice on Friday. They practiced on Saturday.
I know what you're saying.
Right.
I know what you're saying. But, like, you know, Jeff, as a former player, like, how much does the strength and conditioning coach have on the injuries that actually happen? Or is it more of, you know, what the collective bargaining agreement has dictated?
That's a good question.
What the coaches can and cannot do?
Well, I'll break it down. I think that the strength and conditioning coach has a big bearing on how guys prepare for the season, off-season and in-season, workouts, stuff like that. What type of physical activity, what kind of exercises are they doing, the lifts and things? Not every team is the same. So the other thing is that the strength and conditioning coach works collectively with the training staff. So they've kind of got to be on board so that when the player gets hurt and now is sent into the weight room to get some rehab stuff, they got to be on the same page doing exercises and things like that.
Which they are here.
Which they are. And so, you know, that's one thing. The other thing, I forgot what was the second part of that question you asked me about.
How much does it affect potential injuries to strength and conditioning?
And that's just something that I just truly believe that, it was a bit the CBA. I think it has a profound effect on injuries because I don't believe that the players practice anymore. And when they go into games to play 100%, going 100%, your body is not ready for the trauma because they do not use it during the week.
Does your body have to be prepared for contact?
Absolutely.
And does practice help with that?
And it's very simple, like this. If I told you to jog 4 days a week, and then on Sunday we are now going to run as fast as you can, what do you think the propensity for you to pull a muscle is?
Probably pretty strong,
okay? What if I told you we're going to go hit for the, you know, once a week, twice a week, running in pads, and you get your neck into condition where you're used to the trauma, you're used to this, and now you go into a game, and you're doing not so much 100%, but maybe 75 to 80? Your body is going to be used to that type of trauma. They're not doing that now in practice. They don't practice. They walk through.
Which, by the way, was not like Coach Coughlin's choice. This is the rule.
No, this is the way that
it
is everywhere.
Right.
They don't. I mean, come on. It's just not the way it works anymore. So, and again,
by the way, just for the record, folks, this is a former punter wanting more contact in practice. Just
well, I'm just saying
mind.
It's my opinion because of what I have seen over the years. I know that. And I just think it's funny because I don't want no contact. In fact, I have a flag that always protected me from contact. So anyways, it's just one of those things you can – and as an organization, it must drive you nuts to figure out what else can we do to eliminate injuries. I mean,
thank you, Eric. Appreciate the call.
We're one of the most
– thank you, guys.
You're welcome. Sorry we just couldn't talk about it more, but I think you're one of the teams that have been – the most injured team in the league the last 2 or 3 years, and it's just it's a tough pill to swallow. You try to, like John said, they've tried to attempt to do everything, put GPS on these players to find out if they're overheating or they're running too much, or you know, the spa days, as they will on Fridays, they switched up the practices, more of an intense Saturday than a Friday. Did that work? It's just really difficult to pinpoint the exact cause of what's happening.
Yeah, they really thought those recovery days on Fridays would help, but you know, This year they had, but you know what? This year wasn't a lot of muscle stuff. It was a lot of like broken bones,
broken
and
stuff.
So,
I mean, you know, you have
really
like
not
the,
much you could do about
it's so
that.
Funny because sometimes you have the year of the high ankle sprain. Like, you know, your whole team gets high ankle sprains one year.
Remember two years ago you had the year of the sports hernia?
It's unbelievable.
The league,
it's just
here,
kind of just things that happen.
It's weird.
And I will tell you, that all the years that I played in the league, that Fridays was my recovery day. I mean, that was Friday was a day where I went to the chiropractor. I did the massages, did a lot of ice treatment stuff. It was a day that I felt like that was kind of at the end of the week. But remember, I practiced, but I'm just saying the team practiced on Friday harder than they do on the Friday now. But they practice harder on a Friday than they do on a Saturday now. But that was why I did it, because then I would take basically 48 hours with the massage. If you did it on Friday, by Sunday you felt really good. Because the day after massage, if you do it right, you don't feel that great.
And by the way, now that he's not here anymore, I feel more comfortable saying this. These rules drove Tom Coughlin absolutely out of his mind. Let me just tell you, these rules and him being unable to do the type of physical stuff that he wanted to do drove him nuts.
You can't take the stripes off a zebra's back.
Yeah.
Right? And Tom Coughlin is old school.
And look, and that's the thing. He's old school, so he's going to follow the rules to a T.
Yeah.
And it drove him nuts that he couldn't do more of the stuff to lend more physicality and stuff that he would like to in the offseason.
I would tell you that most old school coaches, the Bill Parcells of the world, the Tom Coughlins of the world, would tell you that CB number two, which was the second CB2, is ruining the game of football. And that, I think that it's because they just the injuries and the way the players practice and the way that they do things, it's just a whole different mentality. These younger coaches, they get it because the science of football has been, what is it? Everybody wants to see what the NFL is doing, and then it's down to the college level and this and that. So the coaches that are coming up through the ranks now, they're kind of have gotten used to the type of practices that these things go through nowadays.
And quite frankly, they experiment with a lot of the stuff in the college ranks
right.
before it gets to the NFL. So they come from that, and you look what Chip Kelly brought from Oregon, you know, with the sleep studies and all that stuff that drove players nuts apparently. Now that he's going to bring out the San Francisco, it's a very progressive city. I guess he should fit in just
those
fine.
Guys in San Francisco will be calling the players from the Eagles like, so dude, tell me about this. How is this going to work? Am I going to wear a sleep apnea mask when I go on Friday nights to sleep or what? You know, I don't know. But it's just, it's an ongoing experiment for every team to try to figure out about injuries, but there is no defined reason why or why not that it happens.
Abdul in Minneapolis, he's up next. Abdul, what's happening, pal?
Hey, guys. I wasn't going to call in today because I called in yesterday, so I wanted to give other guys time to talk. But
you
guys keep bringing something up that I want to comment on.
Yes, sir.
People keep bringing up Andre Williams about his disappointing second year. And that made me think of something that Carl Banks said recently about Jerry Reese's performance. And he said he's not going to critique him for picking players because that's not an exact science. But he says his one shortcoming is he keeps players around but don't perform too long. And I think Andre Williams might fall into that. I think
Not yet.
We'll see. Because he does, but I do agree. He keeps players like Holsley and not forgetting the
James Burr.
From Cincinnati. What's that?
James Brewer come to mind?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. The tight end from Cincinnati, who was the JGP of tight ends. What's his name again?
Adrian Robinson.
Right. Players like that were draft picks that for some reason just kept in the Army roster in kind of prominent positions that weren't performing year after year. And I hope Andre Williams turns it around, but he could be an example of that. And I really hope that, you know, if he doesn't perform, that they cut bait and they move on quick, sooner than later. That's another thing I hope that the Giants change in the this next year, that they are a little more, I'd say cutthroat, but a little more aggressive in their personnel decisions.
You know, Abdul, sometimes too, what happens with those players that hang around longer than you think they should, sometimes, and we just got done talking about injuries, sometimes that affords the luxury of those guys hanging around maybe one more year because the people below them got injured and now they've moved up and they're going to give them time to, you know. So sometimes it happens. Sometimes I mean, look at like Ramses Barden. I feel like he was on the cusp of getting cut every single year, but then in preseason somebody would get hurt and then he would go have the most unbelievable game in a preseason and next thing you know he's opened up on a 53-man roster, right? Am I not right?
Yeah,
it's unreal.
True. But
finish up at
Jaron
last
Bosley,
point.
Who kind of constantly underperforms. He stuck around because of injuries this year, I believe. But yeah, was he the best option? You know, could they have gotten someone else who maybe you don't know. You know, this is all hindsight. It's 2020, but
finish up that deal. What's your final point?
I hope they break that that pattern of keeping players around too long. Take care, guys. Bye.
All right, see you, Abdul. One of our long-term callers. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Very knowledgeable.
Freezing his butt off. Then, actually, he froze up the game, the Giants game this year. He told us he was at the game. So,
201-939-4513. Brave guy. I had a point I was going to make, but now it flitted out of my head. Hopefully, it'll come back before the end of the show. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports free to play. And here's my point. And he brought up Andre Williams, and Jason, our first call of the show, brought up Andre Williams. And I think people sometimes try to pigeonhole what a West Coast offense running back is.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Well, here's my thing.
Okay.
What team now will probably run an offense most similar to the New York Football Giants? The Green Bay Packers,
I was
right?
just going to say, the Packers are, yeah.
Well, who's the Packers' primary running back?
Starks, or no, I'm sorry, what's his name?
Eddie Lacy. Does Eddie Lacy look like a classic West Coast offense running back?
No, he looks like a fatter Andre Williams. There you go.
And again, I'm not
saying
Andre Williams is Eddie Lacy. I'm not saying that. Don't go complain on Twitter that I'm saying that. I'm not saying that at all. But don't try to take an archetype and say, well, this is what you have to have.
To run,
get a
right.
good player, and you'll be fine, no matter what the type of player that he is. And you have Shane Vereen to do all that receiving stuff on third down anyway. You want a guy that can pound the ball and get
and
consistent
run,
yards
and
maybe break a big one now or then those first couple downs before you go to Shane Vereen. And, of course, having a versatile guy to pass, protect, and catch is also always a very good thing. Conrad is in Manhattan. He's up next. Conrad, what's happening, bud?
Hi, Conrad.
Conrad going once.
Hello.
Conrad going twice. Conrad's doing the dishes. And
Conrad
is
loading the dishwasher.
That's what it sounded like, right? All right. That steps Len from Maryland into the cleanup hole. Leonard, how are you?
What's up, Len?
Hey, guys. How you doing? How you doing?
You're in a good mood today, Len. I can feel the
energy. What do we got, Leonard?
Hey, we got a new coach. You know, I mean, I'm not that I wanted to see Tom go. I act frankly, and I talked to you about this before, I wanted to see Tom stay. But, look, he's not there, and it was time to get a new coach. I'm, you know, not surprised who it is, and I thought he came across very well today in his presentation. I like what I heard. Even the sound of his voice sounded, there's some leadership quality there. And, I think it's going to work out. Lance gave a really nice one-minute history lesson. It was either yesterday or the day before yesterday about, where the general managers have come from,
where the coaches have come from,
and it's pretty clear that this franchise likes to pick people who they know, who they've spent time with, who understands the way they do business.
Well, Len, here's the thing.
The way things work in Quest Center.
And Len, funny enough, it's
somebody who had been on their staff.
And, Len, funny enough, I think a big part of that, and I know this goes back a long time, but this organization let Tom Landry and Vince Lombardi walk out the door. They were both assistant coaches on the same team. And I understand that now, it goes back to the mid-50s. That's 60 years ago now. But
it goes back to 1959.
There
you
go.
You want to get exact.
Exactly. So that is 56 years ago.
Mr. Mara, Wellington, and his brother at that time. Stayed with Jim Lee Howell, loyal to Jim Lee Howell, who had, given them two championship game appearances. They lost to the Colts both times and had won a championship in 56. Could have easily dumped Jim Lee, who was getting older, and let Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry go. I mean, you look back on it now and you say, holy cow. But that was it. That was it. And 1960 was not a good year, and Jim Lee stepped aside, and they brought in Allie Sherman. But you're exactly right. But I just wanted to tell you the year, so you had it exactly.
You knew the
exact years.
And let me just mention something, too. You know, and you talk about just in the world of business, and this is a big business, as we know, Len, that – you know, it's kind of nice that you can have a 2-year training period as far as getting to know somebody,
yeah,
and it's qualified
yeah.
enough to take the
Absolutely.
Head coaching job. So I think that really makes a difference.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. No, I'm saying it really does make a difference for an organization to be able to get to know somebody. And then if that person has the privilege to even interview for the head coaching job, they've got somewhat of an idea of what type of a person this guy really is. They're going to pay him a lot
of
money.
Absolutely. And that's important. Look, you know, it is a big business, guys. But in the end, it's a family business.
Yeah.
I mean, this family made its money in football. They didn't make it selling used cars
Can you imagine?
They made it in football. Tom referred to that in his farewell speech.
Yeah.
He said, "This is, I mean, it's all about football, and it's a family business, and family businesses run differently than those big corporations.
I
think we just have to live with that. But it's been successful." 1925, 8 world championships. I think if we look at the number of wins, they're probably third or fourth in the league, probably 650 wins over those years. You know, the formula has worked. This family knows what it's doing, or it wouldn't have stayed in business for this long.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I think they made a good choice with Ben. I it just sounded good. The one thing I liked, and John will, I think, recognize this, you know, I'm a big, tough guy from New York. Ha, ha, ha. But, you know, I like when he talked about toughness. And you're going to see him when he referred to, you're going to see it on film. I want other teams that we're and listen, we better get tough quick because that schedule next year, we play that AFC North.
Ravens, Bengals, Steelers, man. Doesn't get it much tougher
than
that.
Oh, my God. We play the AFC North. And we play the NFC North.
Vikings, Bears, and Lions, and Packers.
And we got to face a Jeff Fisher team in London.
That's a good point.
So I mean, you know, we better get because the first thing those teams are going to do, and we saw this with Jeff Fisher last year.
Punch you in
Steelers
the face.
Do it all the time. Bengals do it. First thing they're going to Ravens. First thing they're going to do, guys, they're going to punch us in the nose.
Yeah.
And they're going to see how we react. We better be ready for that. I liked when he talked about toughness. People are going to look. I hope we can. The other teams will look at film. You know, we'll look at film and say, wow, this looks like it's going to be a war.
Thank
that
you,
we're not going to be able to push these guys around. That's the one thing I'm looking for next year. I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, that's all right.
We're just going to tell you goodbye, Len, because we're going to have to run.
okay, guys. Thank you. I want to squeeze in four more guys.
Yep. Len, I agree. And look, Tom Coughlin stretched toughness, too. And again, you would like to try to practice toughness during the week, but it's hard with the CBA rules, obviously. But, yes. You know, toughness is important. And, you know, winning the battle at the line of scrimmage, which I think this team, to a certain extent, has struggled to do the last 3 or 4 years, frankly, a lot of their problems back to that, needs to do a better job of. And I think a lot of that, Jeff, is toughness.
It's mental toughness, and because if somebody punches you in the face, you know, ultimately you want to punch them back. But you also have to understand that this is what they're going to keep doing. So if you're not mentally tough – and being able to say to yourself, hey, how am I going to handle this if I'm not a tough guy physically? You can get them through technique and get them through fundamental stuff. But, yeah, this team's got to be tough, and this is a tough league to play in. And the tough guys are, you know, they're going to have your day with you. If you are one of these guys that they punch in the mouth and you cower down, it's over. It is absolutely over. You got to have – and that comes from right here. I mean, you got to be a – you want to be a tough football player. And toughness means being on the field when maybe something doesn't feel right. You know, and Coach Coughlin alluded to the point that the guys that have toothaches and neck aches and things like that, that, you know, sometimes that's just the way it is. And, you know, you got to go out and play. And I think that the teams that have those types of players, and that's somewhat of what you call leadership right there, is showing other guys that, hey, I'm not going to be in the training room just because my neck hurts. I'm going to be out on a football player on the team, on the field, trying to help this team win.
All right, I got 3 calls. I got 5 minutes. Let's get them
all right,
in.
Abe.
Abe is in New York. He leads us off. What's up, Abe?
Yeah, I know a lot of guys are talking about the coach and how McAdoo, you know, is new and all that. But I want to really ask a question about, I know that the Giants have 2 free agent players, JP and Robert Ayers, and I heard Paul Dottino talking about how Robert Ayers is very big, and you also mentioned JPP, and Lance Meadow, I think, also mentioned JPP together. Well, I want to know, besides for the Giants free agents, who out there is a good like someone the Giants should like set their eyes on, like a free agent that from a different team?
Well, I can tell you there are a few guys out there that are very good. I'm a big Eric Berry fan myself. He's still playing, obviously, but he's scheduled to be a free agent. He just won a battle of cancer. He's, I think, 26, 27 years old, in his prime, covered safety now. I doubt the Chiefs are going to let that guy walk out the door, but that's a guy that I really, really like. Another guy that's going to be a free agent from the Dolphins, who the Giants saw this year, is Olivier Vernon, a pass-rushing defensive end. Now, I've heard there might be some off-the-field stuff with him that's a problem. I don't know that for sure, but that's a guy that's a very talented pass rusher. If the Bills part ways with Mario Williams, that name's been thrown out there also, if you want to talk about him. So, and, of course, the Jets, Muhammad Wilkerson, he's played in the 3-4 for most of his career, but he's a guy that I'm sure could play three-technique defensive tackle, do a job. If you want to look at some veterans, that, again, I'm not a big fan of signing football players older than 30. This a lot of times doesn't work out. Eric Weddle, safety, free agent for the Chargers. Then you also have an older guy, Derek Johnson, middle linebacker for the Chiefs, who's also over 30, but he's a good linebacker. And then, of course, one of the big names out there, I think the Broncos will probably franchise, is Von Miller from the Broncos. He's played 4-3 and 3-4. Alshon Jeffrey, a big wide receiver from the Bears. I don't think they'll let him go either. And that's the trick here, Abe. I think there are a lot of names out there, but you not only have to outbid the rest of the teams, usually team players will generally re-sign with their own teams if they're really good players, because those teams know the players the best. And if they're really that good, they're not going to let them walk away. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, 100%.
Thanks for the call, bud.
Thanks, Abe.
No problem. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I, as you can tell, I've started my free agent watch.
Oh, I just let you go, man. You were on a roll, because I don't know that many free agents right now. I don't even know who the punter free agents are. I usually know that. There you go.
All right. So if anybody has any punting free agent questions, don't call until next week. I know the lines. Matt,
no, not even Matt, next week.
Matt, you have to tell the people that are calling up to want to know about the punter free agents that they have to call back another time. Jeff's not ready yet. Okay?
There's usually only like 7 or 8 of those, so it's easy to follow.
Every decade.
not often.
Oh.
Not as many as John rattles off. I mean, he's the free agent king, I guess.
Well,
right now,
not yet. I've started my work on free agents. And obviously, we don't know. You know, there could be other guys that are cut loose that you don't expect through, you know, salary dumps and things like that. So we'll see. Those are just some names that are out there, obviously. And Robert Ayers, I think JPP, are two defensive linemen. You know, Ayers
is going to test the market. I mean, though, he had a nice second half of the season.
Remember, though, he's been hurt a lot, too, the last 2 years.
Pardon me?
He's been hurt a little bit the last 2 years.
He has.
But again, when he's been on the field, he's been great.
But he had, you know, the sack numbers this year has been pretty good for him. So.
Absolutely. 6 in the last 7 games, I think. Something like that, right?
And I think that he's going to go out and test the market. And, you know, one thing about free agency with the Giants is that they value their own player. They put a value on them, and they'll tell you, we'll keep you for this. But if you want to go out and get something else, and, you know, let us know. But this is what we'll give you.
Well, and the problem with it, too, is that when you go 6-10 straight years, you obviously need to change somewhere. And you need to change the head coach. And, you know, John Mara said it a million times, the way this team gets better is to having better players. So usually to get better players, you have to look elsewhere because, you know.
Any team, for that matter, gets better with better players.
Grim in Queens. What's going on, Grim? How's your brother?
Oh, what's going on, John and Jeff?
Not much.
Get the joke. It's okay. What's up, Grim?
Oh, good, good, man. I just wanted to say a couple of things. First, I know a lot of fans are getting on about Jerry Reese and the draft picks that he's picked over the last couple of years, but I've been looking into it, and I've seen that he has a lot of players that gotten injured, and a lot of players that could have been Pro Bowlers for us, like guys like Kenny Phillips and Terrell Thomas and Steve Smith.
I was looking
at the list of players that just got hurt that could have been our nucleus this year that are just not playing for the team. And I was wondering, do fans ever look about that when they criticize the GM, or do they see things like that?
Thanks for the call, Grim. We appreciate it. Your line's a little noisy.
Well, look
there,
at David
so
Wilson,
we're gonna let
first
you go.
Rounder, gets hurt.
That's another one.
I mean, you know, a first rounder, that's the tough one. You know, but
yeah, Steve Smith, second round pick. Kenny Phillips was a first round pick.
Yeah,
and then of course Terrell Thomas, another second round pick. And you're right; those guys all suffered very serious injuries that were unfortunate. And you know what? The last few years could have been very different if those guys did stay healthy. Grim, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Final call of the show is Charlie up in Portland, Maine. Charlie, I'm only giving you 60 seconds today, pal. Go ahead.
That's all right. Hey, I just want to say, if I was the Giants players, I would try to find David Burns' big suit and uh, Stop Making Sense, a tour. I think that suit would probably be just what he likes.
Well, I'm sorry, Charlie.
Have you ever seen Talking Heads?
No, I have not.
The Stop Making Sense. You should check that out. The big suit. Just put that in YouTube, and it's hilarious.
Okay.
But anyway, the only thing that I wish McAdoo had expounded on a little bit more was about the injury situation. I know he said he's going to look into it. I just wish he had a little more urgency about it. And there are teams, Jeff, that are under the same CBA as we are. Like Miami only had 3 guys on IR this year.
Okay.
So there are teams that don't get the injuries that we do.
That's fair.
And we got to find something to change it. They got to bring people in with new eyes to look and see what we're doing and see what we're not doing.
Well, guess what, Charlie? If Joe Philbin is one of those coaches that comes into this building, well, he was down in Miami. He might have something to say
true.
A little bit about that. So who
that's
knows?
Good. That's
yeah,
good.
They can maybe bounce that off of him.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, guys, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Charlie. Sorry to keep you short, but we got to run here
Charlie
today.
Charlie didn't like offer his services as like an herbalist specialist to come down and have some like secret home remedies.
Yeah, some music guys. He seems to be a music guy. Charlie.
Remember, if people know. Show on Monday for Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
No show.
So that's usually Lance and Tino. You guys will have to survive a week without hearing that wonderful pair hosting a show.
Wouldn't
together.
Be that hard, would it?
Good luck. For Jeff Eagles, I'm John Schmelk.
Ben
McAdoo, the Giants' new head coach. Of course, stay tuned to Giants.com over the weekend as we probably, or maybe, I don't know if probably is correct or not, we potentially could get some more information regarding the Giants staff and other decisions that Ben McAdoo will begin to make as the new leader of the Giants organization and team. For Jeff Eagles, I'm John Schmelk. Enjoy your 3-day weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Tuesday on Giants.com. Have a great one.
All right, here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got through. 35, 30.